And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I hope you had a pleasant Passover or Easter. I'm in my last day of Passover. Come sundown, I can eat bread again. I'll be very happy. And I'm whistling a happy tune. From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, we will fight our country's battles on the land as on the sea. All right, I won't subject you to my singing any longer. I realize there's only a limit you can take. But yeah, I'm pumped up about what happened off the coast of Somalia. Now, I know what you're saying, you know, I mean, military jingoism on the horn, it sounds extraordinary. But I have to admit, I am excited and proud of everyone involved, from the people on the ship to the fearless captain to, yes, I'm praising three sharpshooters, three incredible Navy SEALs who in three shots took out three pirates. I'm praising the Obama administration for standing firm, for giving out the orders to take action if the captain's life was in danger. I'm excited. And I think it's important to praise the military when they do good. God knows we liberals attack the military when it does bad, and we should. It's important to praise them when they do something good. What's shocking to me about the whole pirate crisis, frankly, is the state of events as it existed before the United States got involved. It appears to be a regular thing down there with Western powers, England and France and Norway and Denmark and, you know, all the West, paying ransom to these people when they hijack ships. Now, the French did try their own landing. Unfortunately, they weren't as successful as we were. I don't say that to brag. I say that I'm genuinely sorry. The pirates hijacked a small sailing ship with apparently two couples and a young child, and the French saved three of the four adults and the child, but one died. But to me, what's fascinating about all of this is what it says about your values, what it says about your gut values. On which side do you stand? You know, do you believe in law and order? If the laws make sense, now I'm all about fighting unjust laws. I do it all the time. But if the laws make sense, do you stand by them? Or do you say, you know, it's cheaper and easier just to pay ransom? And of course, I went back to my history books to look up the wars that America almost doesn't know we fought. The song I sang, of course, is the Marine hymn. The hymn for the United States Marines. And it begins from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. How many Americans know what that means? Well, some Americans might realize that the halls of Montezuma is the halls of the Mexican leader, Montezuma, whom we defeated in the United States-Mexican War, in a war that's far less easy to defend than the shores of Tripoli. On the other hand, you know, you've got California and Texas and Arizona and New Mexico and parts of Colorado and Utah and Nevada out of it. So it was a successful war. I guess in hindsight, I'm glad we fought it, though I'm not sure how justified it was. But Montezuma was not exactly the kindest leader either. Montezuma, of course, has gotten his revenge on us in something that Americans are aware of. Montezuma's revenge, of course, is how do I put this delicately without using the word? Let's just say the intestinal troubles one can get, an American can get when they drink Mexican water. Most people have heard of Montezuma's Revenge. They may have sung the Marine anthem and never realized the two are, yes, the same man. But let's talk about the shores of Tripoli. That's the thing that I find most interesting. Because the last conflict of Americans with Barbary, with pirates, occurred about 200 years ago with the Barbary pirates off the Barbary coast. The Barbary coast is today Morocco, Algeria, Tunis, and Libya. The shores of Tripoli. Tripoli is a city in what is today Libya. And what happened was, is American ships patrolled the Mediterranean 200 years ago, in the late 1700s and early 1800s, they and European ships were regularly attacked by Barbary pirates from the Barbary coast who would come in to these ships. This is long before, you can't blame American imperialism for Bob tells me Montezuma had been dead more than 300 years by the time of the Mexican War. Okay, this wasn't on Montezuma. I need to research Montezuma. But he was a Mexican leader that we attacked. I'll look him up there. Alright. We'll research Montezuma later. In any case, about Tripoli, which I do know a lot more about, the Barbary pirates would attack merchant ships, American, English, French, again, not warships, that were just trying to do trade back and forth, and they would take them over and hold people for ransom. At the time, they called it tribute. Very cute word, tribute. It means ransom. They would take hostages, kidnap them, take their ships. And the Europeans just paid them off. They said, well, you know, too bad. It's just sort of the cost of doing business. Frankly, it's the same thing that the insurance companies argue today. That's just the cost of doing business. Just pay them, and they'll go away. Well, that is the way America did it for a while. In fact, at one point, some 20% of the United States Treasury was going to pay off the pirates. Until Thomas Jefferson decided enough was enough, the American nation got more power. And we fought a couple wars down there, a couple wars that really are hardly repeated in United States textbooks. They were between the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812. In fact, there were two separate Barbary Wars in the early 1800s, until finally we stopped people hijacking American ships and taking tribute, taking ransom. And I like the idea that if I'm on a ship with an American flag, that a pirate will think twice before hijacking that American ship. I like the idea that whatever other countries do, they decide to give in to violence and ransom and kidnapping, at least on an American ship, we'll be safe. Now, I know the argument that people make. These are fishermen, the pirates. They're fishermen. And Somalia is a complete failed state. All of that is true. And these were kids. They were high on khat, K-H-A-T, this sort of narcotic drug that they're taking. And that the millions that they take, well, it helps their economy. It goes to their warlords, who can then use it to attack the government help the local economy. And indeed help finance a child army, which is one of the things that warlords tend to do over there. Think about what the Maersk Alabama was doing. The Maersk Alabama was not an American warship. The Maersk Alabama was not delivering arms to any country. The Maersk Alabama was delivering food aid to poor people in Kenya. And the Somali pirates decide to attack an unarmed ship delivering food aid to poor people so they could ransom it off for millions that would go to finance, well, warlords in Somalia. Now, Somalia is a failed state. Somalia has been a failed state ever since, you know, Black Hawk Down, ever since the 90s when you had Bush Sr. there and Clinton there. It does have a very fledgling, moderate Islamic government that it would be nice to do business with. Unfortunately, right now, they control a few square miles of the capital, Mogadishu. They do not control all of Mogadishu, much less the countryside beyond, much less the waters outside. It's a government that we should help. It is, like I said, a moderate Islamic government, far different from, let's face it, the Al-Qaeda supporters that are in the rest of Somalia and just various warlords fighting each other. And no, I'm not arguing to invade Somalia. But one of the things that I think that neither conservatives nor liberals truly get is that you can use force in moderate ways. Conservatives don't get this. Conservatives don't understand that you use sanctions, that you threaten force, that you might even use small amounts of force. You don't have to occupy an entire nation. That Saddam Hussein can cave in through moderate threats without invading his entire nation, spending more money. And by the way, it's more money now than the entire cost of the war in Vietnam, the war in Iraq. That is a last resort. Not only is force a last resort, but occupying an entire country is a last resort. But I think some on the left don't understand that force is sometimes necessary. That sometimes talking doesn't work. North Korea just announced, after shooting its missile, where it shot over Japan, where it could hit Japan, an ally that, after all, could develop nuclear weapons, I'm sure, but has chosen not to, has been peaceful since the end of World War II, the second largest economy and a great ally of the United States. If we don't act against North Korea, well, they're going to threaten Japan in a very severe way. We'll have to start paying the equivalent of tribute or ransom or mafia-type payments. President Obama did the right thing. He went to the Security Council. The Security Council condemned North Korea, and North Korea promptly said, screw you, we're going home. We are now out to build a nuclear bomb and attack all of you. We're going to use it as a threat. Well, that demands a response, just as the pirates demand a response, just as Iran demands a response. President Obama is doing the right thing. He's reaching out to Iran, but he's carrying a carrot and a stick. I have to say, I was very disappointed when the former president of Iran, Khatami, who was a moderate Islamic leader, was told by the supreme leader he can't run for president. They're going to pick the president again. I had thought that was a chance to really reach out to the West. Now it appears Iran is saying, screw you, Obama, we're going home. Well, Vice President Joe Biden said, and people said it wasn't political for him to say so, they said that he said that this new president would be tested. Mark my words, within 6 months, he will be tested. And all the pundits said, oh my God, I can't believe that Joe Biden said that gaffe. Well, what's a gaffe? A gaffe is a political truth that no one wants to mention. And we are being tested. And I think President Obama's response is solid. Now, Bedtime for Bonzo. And by the way, anyone's welcome to call in, including Bedtime. I'd love to talk with you. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Bedtime for Bonzo talks about Somalia, how the developed world is stealing their fish, dumping toxic waste, and so forth. Well, if Somalia had a government that could deal with that kind of thing, then absolutely, it would have the right to respond. It should respond. Unfortunately, Somalia doesn't even have a government. The people in Somalia are busy killing each other, fighting in the streets. And, of course, this occurred outside of territorial waters. But that's not the point. The point is that when you have a failed state, you have far more severe things than illegal fishing. You have the makings of what happened in Afghanistan. You have the makings of what happened to Al-Qaeda. You have the makings of a terrorist group that is going to possibly use a weapon of mass destruction. I was reading the other day that Al-Qaeda is working with biological agents. A whole bunch of them were killed by the bubonic plague. Great, the Black Death, bring back what killed one-third of all Europeans in the 14th century. So I think there is a proper use of force. I think it should be carefully graded. And I think that it's absolutely right to try to talk to the enemy first. See where we can find common ground. I still think we can find a lot of common ground with Iran. I still think Iran would rather have interaction with the West than become a world pariah. I'm not so sure about North Korea. I think North Korea is pretty much dedicated to being a rogue state. And we may have to take very crucial steps. I'll talk about my solution for North Korea a little bit later on. I've talked about it before on the air. It may seem very strong for some of you who don't like force. But I have no problem with the judicious use of force, particularly if it's going to stop something more dangerous from going on. I have to say to Bedtime, who is very welcome to call in, that I don't think the piracy had one iota to do with fishing. That wasn't on the pirates' minds. It wasn't on the minds of the Maersk Alabama. It wasn't on the minds of the U.S. warships that were there. This wasn't about fishing at all. To me, to call it about fishing is to give an excuse to some young people who were high and were trying to steal food aid from the poor and give it to extremely wealthy warlords. So no, I don't think this was about fishing. There are fishing disputes all over the place with the United States and Canada. Lots of nations have fishing disputes. Nations with proper governments can work those things out. This was not about fishing. This was about a test to American power. And had the pirates succeeded, every person on every ship with the United States flag would be in danger. Already, people are in danger throughout that area on other nations' flags. Now, I was reading in the Washington Post while this crisis was occurring. I was reading online, and there was this expert, this expert in insurance. And he was arguing that we should just pay the damn ransom. Pay the ransom. You save the lives, and it's cheaper. And I have no doubt that it is cheaper in the short run. Sure, you pay the pirates $6 million. That's a lot cheaper than sending three warships in their direction. You pay them the money. They go back. The lives are saved. Sure, you lose a ship or two, but they have insurance for that. All right, they have insurance. Look, the insurance company pays. Everybody's better off. I disagree. And frankly, I was astonished by that person's argument. In essence, what he's saying is that it's okay to be lawless. It's okay to harm innocent ships. It's okay to... It's basically saying, you know, leave the mafia alone. As long as you pay them their protection money, they'll go away. Well, I don't want to live in a world like that. I don't want to live in a world where all of us, wherever we travel throughout the world, become targets for ransom. Like it or not, the United States is the world policeman. We are. Perhaps because no one else is willing to do it, but we are. And sometimes, oftentimes, we abuse that privilege. No doubt about it. I talk about it often on my show. But sometimes the people look to the United States precisely for world enforcement. Oh, I'm told that Scott from Sweden, who's on the air. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mark. Mark?
Go ahead, Scott.
I'm talking. You hear me?
Yes, I hear you fine. All the way from Sweden. You disagree with me,
yeah,
I hear.
I'm this obnoxious bedtime for Bonzo guy, too.
Go ahead. Yes.
No, I was just wanted to point out that while I agree that freelancing piracy is awfully nasty and it really has to be stopped, I just wanted to point out that there is a history of abuse of Somali waters, that the swashbuckling cutlass swashes in both directions, that there is a lack of a functional state. Not only means that there's no Coast Guard and Navy to to stop the pirates, it also means there's no Coast Guard and Navy to stop people moving in on a free deal. The EU, where I live, has been, especially the Spaniards, and they're notorious for fishing other people's waters, and there's pretty rich fisheries off of Somalia, and there's not many good rich fisheries left in the world. And it's really a shame, and much of the piracy movement, as I understand it, started off as kind of a do-it-yourself Coast Guard, and naturally there are the bad elements that has freed lands and is broken away, and they are definitely to be stopped. But my point is that if we are going to put an end to this piracy, and we must, we should also do something about putting an end to the reason why these people took to the sea anyways, which was their sense of injustice that people are dumping on them. Because they protested to the EU Commission, and they protested to the U.S., and nobody listened to them. And then there's been dumping of stuff, what I've been reading. It's going past the Red Sea, and it's just a convenient place to dump stuff, and nobody will stop them, nobody cares. So they have a legitimate gripe. They have an illegitimate way of addressing their gripe. But if we're going to talk about putting an end to the pirates, we should also talk about putting an end to the reason why they started off on this nastiness, if you catch my drift.
Let me say this, Scott. I see no connection between the two. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I have no doubt that people are fishing illegally in Somali waters. I have no doubt that there's illegal dumping going on. The proper way to do that, of course, is for the government of Somalia, such as it is. As I said, right now they only control a few blocks around Mogadishu. But presumably they can get somebody to the United Nations, call a security...
That's what I said. They've been protesting for years and been getting nothing but the cold shoulder. So they have tried. And even if you go in and Google this issue, you'll see that the protests go back many, many years, and nobody's been listening. So while I agree with you, they have to resort to vigilantism because what you prescribe and want to be done has been tried and has been ignored. And this is more like this is like the suicide person's cry for help. Their nastiness is I agree with you. It's just awful. And thank God nobody's been killed until now. And you're right that paying off these mafias is a nasty world we don't really want to live in. But we have to conflate the two issues, even though you don't see the connection. There is a connection in their mind. And that it's not in our mind in the West is no excuse. And it's not going to help their... If we just knock them and put them in their place and do nothing and keep letting the illegal fishing go on and the illegal dumping going on, what are they going to do? Because they are complaining that it's ruining the fisheries, it's ruining their industries, it's ruining the provisioning of food along the coast.
Scott, I see them as two very separate issues. If the pirates had gone and scared off a fisherman, you know, who was fishing in their water, had shot some guns above his head and said, "Don't ever fish in my waters again," that would be a completely different story. I would have sympathy for them. That would be
they've been doing that for years, and still the boats come. And now the West is coming in with their gunboats, and they're going to protect them.
Right. I think this is about
a failed state. The illegal actions, unless we ourselves join it together. Because if we descend in the Navy and we descend in the boats and we don't protect their interests as well, and we only protect the ships doing what they're doing, some of it very illegal itself, but who's going to stop them? The Somali Navy? There isn't any. So
let me ask you this.
If illegal fishing boats, calling it all piracy, the abuses go on.
Scott, let me ask you this. Right now, because of what we did, I think pirates are going to think twice before they attack another ship with an American flag flying. Let's say there's a ship
I think they will go after the Swedish ship and take Swedish people and
demand ransom from Swedes because Sweden isn't responding in the way that we are. Don't you think?
What was that?
Right now, because of the actions of the American military, I think the pirates are going to think twice before they attack another American ship with an American flag flying. I don't think they'll think twice before they attack a ship with a Swedish flag flying. Don't you think that now more non-American ships will be focused on until, say, Sweden decides to fight back? Don't you think that's the likely result?
I think they're desperate. I think when your fishing, your rich fishing industry has gone kaput, people are stealing your fish and people are dumping crap in your things. You have no national government, and you somehow think that, in especially in this society that loves the gun like ours, I mean they're freelance gunning it, and we're sending in a government to gun it. I mean it's pushing coming to shove, and.
I guess I disagree with you, Scott. I think they're desperate.
Shooting in an American ship, but maybe they'll think, what do we got to lose?
Well, I think they're desperate people all over the world. I think they're failed states all over the world. I mean, look at the desperate people in Darfur who are suffering genocide right now while the world completely looks the other way as regularly towns are razed to the ground and hundreds of thousands, it's probably more than a million now, men, women, and children are being killed. If the people of Darfur went in and attacked the Sudanese military and blew up a building, I completely understand that. But this is a very different situation. I mean, Somalia is a...
You say, here are these people who feel that they're being aggrieved, they're being pushed around and having their resources taken, and they fight back, and you agree with that. But now a lot of these people feel their fishery is being taken place and their livelihood is being polluted, and they're fighting back, but you don't agree with that.
Well, first of all, this attack had nothing to do with...
It doesn't hold. I mean, you're looking at... You've painted two very similar scenarios, but yet you draw different outcomes.
See, Scott, I really think there's a tendency, I think, to see all attacks on the United States as justified. To say that it doesn't matter if you're attacking food, chip, giving aid. It doesn't matter if your goal is money going to a warlord.
They didn't have the manifest. They didn't know what they were attacking. I mean, these guys opportunity.
The mayor of Alabama was not a fishing boat.
And that's what they find out what they've done.
I assure you.
Freelancing. They didn't attack a ship.
They may have been children, but they are sophisticated enough to recognize the difference between a fishing boat and a container ship. They look very different. These people they made a deal, Scott. They made a deal with these
containers. Full of toxic waste. That's how container ship goes by. It's loaded with toxic. They just drop one off. It sinks. To them, a container ship could easily be any container ship could be another one of those.
I think
these ships off their shores. Even though I disagree.
I got to tell you, I think that's post hoc rationalization and justification. If they, as I said, if they had used an AK-47 to scare away a fisherman, not shoot him, but shoot above his head to scare him away. If they had gone to the Security Council to stop the illegal fishing, if delivered toxic substances and they went to protest the dumping, here's the thing that I guess has always bothered me. There is a way to fight oppression, a proper way. One of the things that Mahatma Gandhi, I think, taught the world, and Martin Luther King taught the world, is that you can bring attention to oppression in very powerful ways. Powerful ways. I mean, he freed all of India. And do so without violence. I think there are some who say that anytime there's an attack on American power, they must be justified for some reason. They're
not
justified.
I'm just saying that we have to tie the issue of their motivation on why these people took the decision to away boats and assure
their motivation was money. How is motivation different from the mafia's motive?
The illegals out of your waters, and you stop pirating. That way,
I think you could argue that a kid in New Jersey who's beaten by his parents and then grows up to be in the mafia, was harmed and is suffering and is desperate and goes out and so he kills a bunch of people but he does it for his mafia boss and he does it for his honor and we have to feel sorry for him. I disagree. A lot of people go through a lot of suffering on this planet, and the right way to go about it is not to hijack a ship and demand ransom.
You know, I've told you, I actually agree with you that they shouldn't be hijacking these ships. I agree with you. But what I'm saying is that the resolution of this conflict is not merely to slam them back into their place because we have the bigger and better guns and weaponry. But we're talking about an area about the size of half the United States.
Well, there are a couple ways I would resolve the conflict.
That the resolution to stop this nastiness that we don't want to see happening is we also have to assure them that their rights to their own territorial waters will be respected they don't have the central government to respect it. Otherwise, it would be like other governments along
the coast. Here's the thing. Somalia doesn't exist, Scott. So, I mean, as you know, Somalia, it's when you say their territorial waters, which warlord
Somalia
are you talking
about? Somalia is a nation.
The warlord that controls this area of the coast or the warlord that controls that area of the coast, and they're busy killing each other over these territorial waters. There is a recognized Somali government. Which I would hope
the West has the right to take this because they're warring amongst themselves? That they could take the fish?
I think that Somalia doesn't exist right now. There is no government. The only Somalian government is one that, like I said, I support. It's a moderate Islamic government. It controls a few blocks around the capital. The Obama administration is giving aid to that government, and I would like to support that government and help that government take over
the rest
of
the water to everybody? Because that's a little dysfunctional government?
Here's the thing. When you don't
have right to the territory that used to be recognized by the rest of the world when the government was functional?
Which people? They're fighting each other over that territory.
All nations, isn't there an international, you're a lawyer, aren't there
international laws
that the territorial waters extend a certain distance, and that is recognized by everybody?
That's correct.
This is the distance out. And even
that's
if the government is dysfunctional, shouldn't the citizens of that territory, the people that live there, have the right to what was their water while the government was functional?
Yes, if they don't misuse it. In other words,
if they misuse it, it's free for the Spaniards to come
attack,
and take the fish.
They have the right to fish, yes. They have the right to attack merchant ships that are unarmed, that are traveling through. No, they don't. That's also part of international law.
They have that right to attack them.
International law and piracy.
What I'm saying is, they can keep doing that as long as
we can't. We can't hear each other, so I've given you a lot of chance. Let me explain, and then I can hear you respond. Okay? There is international law on all of these things. And you're absolutely right. There is a law of the sea. There's a 200-mile boundary. And if people are fishing where they shouldn't be fishing, the Somali government, such as it is, it may only control a few square miles of Mogadishu. But they can do what any other country with a fishing dispute does. They go to international bodies. Some are at the United Nations. Some are outside the United Nations. And they complain. And people investigate. And the problem is Somalia doesn't have a military to do these things. But as I said, if people want to be vigilantes to stop fishing boats, I'm okay with that. But when a failed state uses the failure of a state, uses the fact that there's anarchy and no one in control, to do violence against the rest of the world, there is also an international law that dates back to the Barbary Pirate Wars, to more than 200 years, which says that you've got an unarmed merchant ship and is allowed to pass through without being harmed. And this is
the
fact what things we established back in the Barbary Wars of the late 1800s. You can't demand tribute, and obviously they've broken that law as well. So I think we have to distinguish between the two. Now, my hope is that if we aid this incipient government, that eventually it can take over, eventually it can control the territory, and eventually it can stop the piracy. But I have to say, that's hard going. It's not easy to do. The other thing we can do that I think we are doing is to have designated shipping lanes where we tell ships, hey, go between these lines and we'll protect you, and you're less likely to be hit by pirates. Go ahead.
Actually, we're in agreement on that.
Okay.
We agree on
that. We're not that far apart. not as far apart as you think.
That the piracy must be suppressed, but I also think that since they can't protect themselves, we ought to also be telling everybody else to stay out of their water and enforce that as well. Because if they feel, they're not going to come out and attack ships if the ships aren't there to attack.
Well, there are always going to be
ships. Fishing it isn't there.
They're
going to attack an illegal dumper if the dumper isn't there.
Well, but the Horn of Africa, particularly on the other side of Somalia, is a very narrow strait. And you have a right to go through international straits. That's, by the way, an exception to the law of the sea, the 200-mile. You have a right to go through those international waters. There's no way to get to the Persian Gulf except going through the strait that goes next to Somalia. That's the only way to get there. And we're not going to stop all international shipping because a few, teenagers are high on a drug and trying to get millions of dollars. That's why I was shocked, I think, to see the people saying, just pay them off. Just pay them off and you go to the insurance company. You don't think that's the solution, do you, Scott?
No, but I also think killing these people is kind of scary because that's entered killing into it. And now I think there's a risk that some people just may get pissed off and go out there with an RPG against the side of a tanker. I think we should have tried to nab them all in place and arrest them, adding death, because they hadn't killed anybody before.
Well, now we have entered
on our side killing. And
as you know, President Obama is
more vulnerable to attack from a tanker. It's scary. We've added death and killing to a situation that lacked it before. I hope it works out.
President Obama had a standing order that said if it looked like they were going to kill the captain, that was the only time you could shoot. And they had an AK-47 in his back, and that was the decision of the commander on the field, that it looked like they were about to kill the captain. They had said they were going to kill the captain. Let me finish. They were out there in choppy waters, and there were pirate ships, literally, coming to their aid. The American Navy managed to scare them off. And then the ship was floating closer to shore. It was in choppy waters. The American Navy asked the pirates if they would agree to let them tow it out to smoother waves because they were in all these choppy waves. The pirates agreed. The American Navy then took them out further from shore. The pirates very much wanted to get to shore, which was making them increasingly upset. And then the Navy, they had sharpshooters fly in, Navy SEALs. They landed in parachutes and waters around the USS Bainbridge. They made it to the ship. And they also took the tow line, which I thought was a very clever thing to do, quietly at night. And they took it from 200 feet away to about 80 feet away, and they managed to save the hostage. You know, I think
they've added the element.
I do not believe we can fight
an area where these people have some nasty metal penetrating weapons, and they're oil tankers. I hope it works out, but it's.
I'm sorry.
It's escalating a bad situation.
It is a bad situation.
I'm glad to save them. I really am. We've added death and killing to a tinderbox.
I don't mind killing them at all. I don't. I think it was the absolute right thing to do. And I think that had they killed the captain, that would not have been a success. There are people who say, well, you know, so what?
Well,
so if we don't kill them, they kill an American.
First tanker goes up, big ball of flame.
There was no other way out. There was no other way out that I can see.
Yeah, just pay them off and then get them later.
Yeah, pay them off. Pay them off. When you pay them off, what happens? More pirates come because and soon every single ship, why should it just be in Somalia? Every ship in the entire world could and should be attacked. You just pay them off. Easy money. I don't believe you. One of the things that
America's a kind of kill them off crazy. I think it is.
One of the things that Ronald Reagan,
the bullet,
very upset, was when the Iranians took American hostages. He traded arms for hostages, and he was wrong to do it, because whenever you pay off people who take hostages, they take more hostages.
Whenever you pay off the mafia, they become
more powerful.
High society, they start killing.
It's not eye for an eye. It's not for eye for an eye. What you're doing is it's a question of whether you're going to have a police force or whether you're going to have anarchy. And if you do not protect people from violence, violence spreads the entire world over. If you do not let people know that if they take a hostage, they are likely to die, more people will take hostages. I think it's the same with the terrorists in Mumbai. You could have said, just let them have the hotel. Sure, they're killing hundreds of people, but we shouldn't kill them. I mean, paying ransom is exactly the wrong way to go. And
escalated killing is the way to go.
I don't think it's escalated. I actually think it will decrease
them.
That fewer pirates will attack American ships. Now, they're going to attack Swedish ships, for sure, and Danish ships, no question. And they'll attack all the neutral, you know, they'll attack Icelandic ships. Any ship that doesn't fly an American flag, the people are going to be in danger. Unless those militaries, too, fight back. Because the truth about it is that bullies don't pick on the strong. They pick on the weak. And I have no problem with America using force.
Yes, and that is why 9/11 never happened. Because big, strong America was too weak to be picked on. I mean, come on.
We are never going to satisfy people who hate America, Scott.
Right.
Never.
And,
what we can do is do what the president does.
And you killed the people that are family. They just may pick out an American ship next time precisely because it was Americans who killed their guys. I mean, we don't know. These people are...
Well, we'll see. If they do that, we'll kill some more.
They're violent.
Don't you see, Scott, the way... I like the way President Obama reacts to all of this because he hands both a carrot and a stick to everyone, whether it's North Korea or Iran or Somalia or, frankly, even the Republican Party. He hands out a carrot and a stick. He says, I'm willing to work with you. I respect your culture. I want to help your society. We want to help rebuild Somalia. But if you're going to attack an innocent container ship delivering food aid to poor people,
and then you're going to take the captain hostage anyway, right? They could have thought that that thing was just full of TVs they could sell on the black market. I mean, these guys don't have the sophistication to know the manifest. That wasn't their motivation.
These people were not about fishing. They weren't. They were about money. That's what they were about. And I don't know how you feel.
Agree to disagree
people
here.
People have a right to rob other people.
I just want to say, nice talking to you.
Well, Scott, I appreciate your tangling with me on the air. I do, and I do appreciate your calling in, even though we disagree.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Thanks again. At the end of the day, it bothers me when we think people think American can be walked all over. Now, I'm not saying overreact. I'm not saying, as some conservatives were saying, go to Somalia, bomb the coast, take over the government. No. That's a way, way, way overreaction. But defending the right of ships? For 200 years, an American vessel had not been attacked. For 200 years. Precisely because people remembered the Barbary Wars of 1801 and 1815. People remembered that we were willing to defend our interests. What is the point? And maybe some will say there's no point. Fine. But what is the point of having spent trillions of dollars on having the best military in the world if you're not going to use it to protect innocent Americans who aren't harming anybody else? Now, maybe there's no point. Maybe we should just, you know, get rid of our military entirely. And there's some that would argue for that. Listen, one of the things that I like that Secretary Gates was doing was he's cutting at least some of our crazy programs. F-22s we don't need, ballistic missiles we don't need. Frankly, I didn't think he cut enough. But we don't want to be a paper tiger. I don't think it's a coincidence that the Somali pirates attack at the same time as North Korea is shooting its missiles, at the same time as Iran is announcing its nuclear program. People are testing this new leader. Joe Biden was right. And the right response is not a George Bush, you know, invade the country response. But neither is the right response, okay, we'll pay you off. That's not the right response either. All it does when you pay off a bully is it makes the bully more powerful. It makes the bully go and bully others even more. I fear for other nation ships. I was glad that France did what it did. I would hope that other nations start protecting their ships. And I would hope that we could do something about the people in Somalia. How do you redirect people who are suffering in a failed state? How do you redirect them to doing things that help them? Well, one thing I think is important is economics, right? Scott mentioned if their fishing is being harmed, the United States should say, you know, don't fish. It'd be nice. I would praise President Obama if he announced, hey, we shouldn't be fishing in those waters. I frankly don't know that many people are fishing in those waters these days because of the pirates. I don't know that any too many fishermen in Somali waters, but I'd have no problem. I think that the nation should announce they shouldn't get there. But the reason I was so proud, I think, was I think it was a proper reaction. Note that we didn't shoot the pirates right away. We negotiated with them. We gave them time to do the right thing. The captain tried to escape. He failed. They shot at him. And we only acted when they had a gun to his back. So I was very proud of America. I was very excited to hear that this captain was saved. And I don't think the proper response is to simply pay them off with ransom. But you may ask, well, why is that fair? After all, the shipping companies get the benefits of having a world police, the United States military, helping them. But they don't pay for it. They only pay for it through insurance. And, Mark, you've just said that, you know, well, the insurance, that's not the way to go about it. So I would support a tax. Just as rich people need to pay higher taxes, because let's face it, the police stop their robberies more than poor people's robberies, right? Poor people don't usually rob other poor people too much. They do, to some extent. But a lot of times the police are protecting rich people's resources. But rich people pay higher taxes. I'd have no problem with charging American vessels a tax that would go to protecting their shipping. That's okay with me. That's not insurance ransom paid to the kidnappers. That's money paid to, you know, the U.S. government, the U.S. military, to help defend them. Okay. I was just reading the chat room. Scott, thank you for ranting. No, listen, the interesting thing is I don't know that Scott and I disagreed on too much. We agreed on the principles. You know, the pirates are wrong. Breaking international fishing is wrong. But at the end of the day, we have failed states all around the world. As I mentioned, the most serious right now is in Darfur. We have certainly North Korea. We have Iran. We have states throughout Africa that are crumbling under the weight of people who are HIV positive. And I think that there has to be some combination of aid for the poor, just like that Maersk Alabama was doing, and, yes, a military force that says you don't attack an innocent ship and expect to be paid off. The correct thing is to find that balance. Now, I want to move on to North Korea, and this is something I've proposed in the past, and I think many of you may be shocked to hear it, but let's go forward. I'm nervous about North Korea. I'm very nervous about North Korea. I think particularly after North Korea just today announced that they are going to kick out all the UN inspectors, they're going to pursue a nuclear program with abandon, and they're going to develop the missile technology to not only hit Japan, but also hit Hawaii, Alaska, perhaps the Western United States. What do we do about North Korea? Well, first of all, I think we need to talk to countries like China, who should be just as nervous about North Korea as we are. After all, North Korea borders China. It's a heck of a lot closer to China. And as I've said in the past, I see a massive difference between democracies and dictatorships obtaining nuclear weapons. Both North Korea and Iran argue it's a question of sovereignty. Every sovereign nation, they say, should have the right to develop nuclear weapons. I strongly disagree. Now, if you tell me that a democratic nation wants to develop nuclear weapons because they have a real threat that they're responding to, I understand that. I understand why India has nuclear weapons. I'm not that concerned. I understand why Israel has nuclear weapons. South Africa, now that apartheid is gone, probably doesn't need their nuclear weapons. I don't know anyone that's threatening to attack South Africa. But I'm less concerned when they're in charge of a democratic government with its checks and balances and protection. I hope that South Africa, Israel, India, England, France, the United States, I hope we're all careful protecting our nuclear weapons. I know that Russia, for example, is not. One of the things I worked on in Congress when I was there was when the Soviet Union fell apart, there were loose nukes all over the place, in Ukraine and Kazakhstan and Belarus, and we very much wanted to sponsor a bill to buy up these loose nukes. Heck, even paying the ransom, the tribute, if you will. Because a threatened nuclear warhead is a lot more dangerous than pirates on a container ship. At that time, in 2001, the Bush administration said no, they wanted their tax cuts, and they wouldn't do that. But this is something that President Obama worked on as Senator Obama a few years later. The point is that I am nervous about Russia and China with nuclear weapons, but there ain't nothing we can do about that, at least not right now. These are very powerful countries. They have more than enough nuclear weapons to eradicate us entirely, and we to eradicate them. I'm not trying to pick a war with Russia or China. We just have to hope that no radical government gets control of either of those countries. Luckily, they're fairly stable dictatorships. So you look at a country like North Korea, where you've got Kim Jong-il, who really is a one-man government. When he dies, I don't know what happens. He took power from his father, Kim Il-sung. Would he give power to his children? I don't know. And he wants a lot of attention. And Bill Clinton, I thought, came up with the perfect solution in the 1990s. It was one that the Republicans criticized him for in the strongest possible terms. He said, we'll put inspectors in there. We'll watch to make sure you don't build nuclear weapons. And we'll give you a bunch of food aid for your people. Give you a bunch of surplus Kansas wheat. We did that. The Republicans complained we were giving in to terrorists, but actually I think it was a very small concession to stop North Korea from getting nuclear weapons. Yes, it was tribute. Yes, it was a bribe, but it wasn't to four teenagers. It was to an entire government controlled by a man who had a million people in arms. See, sometimes I guess I do believe in paying tribute, but only to the most powerful of actors. As is well known, once we began the war in Iraq, North Korea saw our eye was off the ball. They threw out the inspectors. They rapidly built the nuclear weapons. George Bush did nothing. And now they're testing Barack Obama. Here's my solution, and I don't expect many of you to like it. But if you don't like it, I want you to come up with your own solution, because I don't know of a better one. What I would do is I would, secretly, and maybe we're doing this already, I would give tactical nuclear weapons to South Korea. Install them, get them working first. Do that quietly, do it now if we haven't done it already. Then I would tell North Korea what we've done and offer an exchange. Offer a nuclear-free Korea with verified dismantling of both the North Korean and the South Korean nuclear sites under the IAEA or any other international auspices, and allow South Koreans to witness the North Korean dismantling and North Korea to witness the South Korean dismantling. If they accept, great, we have a nuclear-free Korea, we have won. If North Korea does not accept, well, South Korea is now armed to the teeth. And it might just make North Korea think twice before it truly threatens anyone, particularly South Korea. Now, I know that arming a country to the teeth is not something that many people would want. Suggests that we get to hold the firing mechanism. I'm okay with that, with us holding the firing mechanism over South Korea, though I don't know that I want to make that 100% clear. Maybe we do that, but do it in secret. I'd want North Korea to at least wonder whether South Korea had the power to shoot back, because the thing that we have to be scared of that everyone mentions is that North Korea has a much larger army than South Korea. They can come across the border. And for all the tens of thousands of Americans that died in the Korean War, I would hate to see South Korea run over today either. But I don't think the right response to a bully is usually to pay them off. We have spent countless trillions of dollars to become this powerful country. And I don't think we should be a paper tiger. Now, that doesn't mean we should invade countries that never attacked us, as we did in Iraq. That doesn't mean that we should torture. That doesn't mean that we should have secret prisons. That doesn't mean that we should hold people and send them to other countries to be tortured. Extraordinary rendition. If there's going to be a world policeman, I'm glad it's us. I mean, I wouldn't mind if it were Canada or, you know, Sweden. That's okay with me, too. But I'm glad it's in the hands of a democracy that at least, even when we go to excess, has the power to vote out the people that did the excess and put in someone who will watch, who will roll back our excesses. I think there will always be a world policeman. I think there always has been, whether at the time of the British Empire or whether at the time of the Roman Empire. There has always been a world policeman. And if it's going to be anyone, I'm fine with it being America. Now, maybe that's just jingoistic of me. Maybe that's just, you know, my home country speaking on behalf of my own people. But like I said, it didn't have to be us. It could, you know, NATO's fine. I trust Canada. I trust England. I trust the French. I don't always agree with them, but I trust them not to do anything too out of line. They tested us. I think President Obama passed the test. And I actually think this incident may, and maybe I'm just being optimistic here, may just help us in North Korea, may just help us in Iran, may just help us. You know, President Obama announced that we want to rid the world of nuclear weapons. Now, that announcement is a nice thing to work toward, maybe a little naive. President Reagan also announced he wanted to rid the world of nuclear weapons. It's a nice thing to believe. But in the real world out there, I don't think even Obama believes that they're going away anytime soon. And the thing that's most important is to keep them from proliferating, to keep them from going in the hands of someone who might use them, to keep Hiroshima or Nagasaki from never happening again. Yes, I realize we're the one country that has used nuclear weapons. But the situation is what it is. And I don't believe an American leader would use nuclear weapons absent the absolute most extreme emergency, and maybe not even then, not again. I'm less clear on Russia and China. I'm far less clear on Pakistan. And I'm certainly not clear with that on North Korea or Iran. Let's give these countries a chance to become part of the world. We can promise them economic goodies. We can threaten sanctions. We can do things that I think most Iranians and North Koreans would welcome. And we need to always remember that our fight is not with North Korea or with Iran or its people, but only with its leaders. The people of Iran happen to be the most pro-American people in the entire Middle East. When President Obama announced the greatness of Persian culture, he was dead on. Let's hope for the people of Iran and North Korea to overthrow their leaders. Let's hope for the people of Somalia to get a hold on their country. And let's do everything we can, short of invasion, to help these people regain their power. Because having a military might means not that we don't ever use it, but that we use it as rarely as possible. If you want to comment on today's show, please do so. Welcome your comments. Go to RadioInsideScoop.com. Let me know what's on your mind. This is Mark Levine, signing off.